Welcome to the Political Rewind. I'm Madhani Maturi. Today, outraged lawmakers use the tax code to take your AIG millions back, while somewhere in Michigan, unemployed auto workers wait in hope. But first, the president's ballooning budget deficit and arugula.
Sadly, this next story probably won't surprise you. The budget deficit looks to be even worse than we thought. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office will release a new estimate today of this year's federal deficit, and the number is expected to hit a staggering $2 trillion. That's hundreds of billions of dollars more than expected just a couple of months ago. NPR's Andrea Seabrook reports.
They knew it was going to be bad. Since the last forecast, the budget has suffered a kind of 1-2 punch. Congress passed two huge spending bills, the stimulus package and an omnibus funding measure. And in the meantime, the economy only continued its downward slide. That made the predictions of this year's deficit go from bad to worse. But even though they knew it was coming, the number stings. Some $2 trillion of new debt this year. This has the potential to change the political landscape for the Obama administration. Yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was bracing herself for the fight this will surely spark.
You can't say we're going to do less because those numbers are pessimistic. You say we have to do what we do in light of those numbers.
Pelosi said she doesn't think the deficit will be as bad as the Congressional Budget Office will project. The White House's own estimate is somewhat lower, at $1.75 trillion. Still, the Obama administration and Pelosi both say they're sticking to their goals, even because the numbers are so bad.
We have to recognize that education, a change in energy policy, and health care reform are what will turn the economy around, bring money to the Treasury, make us competitive internationally, and put the economy on a much more stable footing as we go into the future.
So the speaker is saying more spending and more borrowing. That is definitely not the key to prosperity.
Paul Ryan is the top Republican on the House Budget Committee.
The Bureau of Public Debt is telling us that the federal government's going to have to borrow four times as much as we ever have in the history of our country in a single year.
Ryan and others say this is unknown territory. Deficits have never been so deep. Congress has never spent so much so fast. Some worry about how America's creditors will take this news, especially if the government makes no signs of cutting back. Leading Democrats respond that the crisis is unknown territory, and if the government doesn't pump money into a bad economy, who will? Still, even before the new deficit projections, President Obama's ambitious and expensive agenda was already drawing a tough eye from fiscal conservatives, like Republican Mark Kirk of Illinois.
The American people are absolutely ready for action by the White House to fix the economy and to put Americans back to work. But other priorities, nationalizing health care and on climate change, etc., this may not be the time.
Kirk is part of a key group of lawmakers the Obama administration would like to have on its side, fiscal conservatives, but social moderates. To hear Kirk say, this may not be the time, signals a shying away from the Obama administration's big ideas. So while the economy is hemorrhaging, the political will to tackle Mr. Obama's agenda may be bleeding away with it. Andrea Seabrook, NPR News, the Capitol.
The White House will be breaking ground today on a shovel-ready project close to home, an organic garden on the South Lawn. The garden is about 1,100 square feet and will grow 55 vegetables, including arugula, which was requested by the Obama White House chefs.
As if that deficit news weren't bad enough, the House today tried to address the growing fury over big corporate bonuses. It voted overwhelmingly to impose a 90% tax on such payments. That would apply to firms getting more than $5 billion in federal bailout funds. Among those firms is the troubled insurance giant AIG, which sparked the outrage by paying millions in bonuses to employees of its biggest money-losing unit. NPR's David Wellner reports.
There was not one hearing on the hastily drafted bonus tax bill. Instead, it went straight to the House floor, propelled there by outrage over AIG's bonus bonanza. New York Democrat Carolyn Maloney told colleagues it would be morally reprehensible for Congress not to act.
The bill we consider now to tax bonus payments, such as the ones in question at AIG, at the effective rate of 90% sends a message that cannot be mistaken. The game is finished. The casino is closed.
And even though Ways and Means Committee Chairman Charles Rangel balked just a few days ago at levying a huge tax on bonuses, by today he was fully on board with the idea.
We're not trying to punish anybody. We just say do what you have to do. Rewards are subjective, but you don't do it with taxpayers' money.
But some Republicans cast doubt on the constitutionality of such a tax. California's Dan Lundgren reminded colleagues the Constitution prohibits so-called bills of attainder, which single out individuals or groups for punishment without trial.
If we overturn the Constitution to show our outrage, no single American is safe. Because in the future, what we will do is say we have a precedent that when we have an unpopular group, when we have a group that deserves some punishment, we won't go through the real laws. What we'll do is we will pass a new tax law with confiscatory rates and say, we've done it for the American people.
House Minority Leader John Boehner said he wasn't telling his fellow Republicans how to vote, but Boehner himself called the bill a sham aimed at covering up the fact that a provision was inserted by Democrats in the recent economic stimulus bill shielding the AIG bonus payments.
This political circus that's going on here today with this bill is not getting to the bottom of the questions of who knew what and when did they know it.
Boehner said rather than approving a new tax, Congress should be carrying out a probe into how the bonus shielding provision got into the stimulus bill, which every House Republican opposed. But New York Democrat Steve Israel said there's just one thing that constituents wanted to know.
Did you vote to recover my money or did you vote to allow them to get away with my money? That's what this is about, Mr. Speaker. The American people have had it with the posturing and the partisanship and the politics. They want their money back.
The only Republican who spoke in favor of the bonus tax was Michigan's Dave Camp.
It is our duty to protect and defend hardworking taxpaying Americans. At the end of the day, this insult to taxpayers cannot, should not, and will not stand, and I urge my colleagues to vote for the measure.
In the end, the bonus tax passed by a vote of 328-93. 85 House Republicans voted for it, and 87 opposed it, along with 6 Democrats. The Senate is considering similar legislation. David Wellna, NPR News, The Capitol.
I'm Madhani Muturi, and it's the Political Rewind. Finally today, Motor City sings the blues.
Because of the trouble in the auto industry, the recession hit Michigan earlier and harder than the rest of the country. And history shows that any eventual economic recovery could take longer there. General Motors and Chrysler need billions more in federal aid. A decision by Treasury officials is due in less than 2 weeks, which means Michigan residents are anxiously watching Washington, though they know that federal help won't guarantee a turnaround. NPR's Don Gagne reports from his home state. He's in Detroit.
When you live in Michigan, you get used to the ups and downs of the auto industry. Years of good times yield to difficult stretches, but there's always a sense that you get through the tough times and that things eventually turn around. Such is life in Michigan, but now it all feels different.
You know, this is the worst I've ever seen it, ever, in my lifetime, since we were kids.
That's 51-year-old Don Skidmore. He hired in at General Motors when he was 20 years old. Today, he is president of UAW Local 735 at the company's Willow Run plant. The screensaver on Skidmore's computer looks to his factory's storied past.
That was during World War II. We built the B-24.
The B-24 is the bomber known as the Liberator, built back when Detroit was known as the Arsenal of Democracy. Today, Willow Run builds transmissions for GM trucks. 3 decades ago, this factory had 14,000 workers. Today, it has 1,400. Next month, it'll be down to 1,100. And the scary reality is that even if GM gets the help from the federal government it wants, there's no guarantee that this plant will be part of its future. Skidmore, whose 6'3", 330-pound frame gives him the look of a Detroit Lions offensive tackle, says these days he feels as much like a guidance counselor as a union leader.
No doubt about it. And I've had lots of friends that are 30-year guys that, you know, I have kids in college, I'm not ready to go. And what I tell people is stay positive. If you're retiring out of fear, you don't have the money, or you're really not ready to go, don't go. Ride it out, because I think GM is going to push through the other end of this. I think we can hold on and things will get better, and I'm an optimist.
Still, Skidmore says he spends a lot of nights unable to sleep, worried about it all. And the whole state is feeling something akin to that. Property values have plummeted, houses aren't selling, school districts are losing revenue, governments are slashing budgets, the unemployment rate has jumped to 11.6%, worst in the nation. Tom Gore is a 51-year-old mechanic from Dearborn Heights who says he's been out of work since August. He also works in new home construction, but that has dried up as well. He says if the nation is suffering from recession, it deserves a different name in Michigan.
This feels more like depression. It's just snowballing is all it's doing. Who's going to say if it's going to start straightening out this year or it's going to take another year or two before it starts getting somewhere?
In Auburn Hills, Michigan, 65-year-old Norm Hovey is out of work and contemplating a retirement he wasn't ready for. Hovey says if the U.S. wants a middle class, then it can't let companies like GM and Chrysler fail.
If we don't do something about keeping our manufacturing base, we're going to be a third world country. And I hope to God people have, you know, see some sense. Obama's not doing everything I want, but he's trying. I hope he's successful.
Michigan's Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm says she sees encouraging signs from the members of the president's automotive task force that they're looking to help GM and Chrysler avoid going into bankruptcy in the fight to stay alive, although what the task force will do is not yet known. And this week, Granholm held an event with nine companies that are combining to bring some 2,500 new jobs to the state. Still, it's a tiny bit of good to report amid so much bad news.
So much of this is tied into what the auto task force decides. If they decide that they are going to partner with this industry, there'll be one outcome. If not, then it could get much, much worse.
And that is why people in this state seem to be holding their breath. Don Gagne, NPR News, Detroit.
Thanks for listening to the Political Rewind. For more politics, join NPR's Political Junkie at npr.org.